And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. The show is engineered by Alex Noyes and Erica Bassett. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
KBOO Portland. The time is now 5:59. And we just got done listening to the KBOO Evening News, and the Evening News is produced right here, 1 hour newscast every single weeknight. And we need writers, editors, reporters, and more to make this grassroots community resource happen. So if you're interested, email Lisa Loving at newsdirector@kboo.org or call 503-231-8032, extension 203.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to be a founding sponsor of the Waterfront Blues Festival, the hallmark event for the Oregon Food Bank. Once again, with our partners at Oregon Community Media, KBOO will be broadcasting the four-day festival in the Portland metro area, across the state from Astoria to Ashland, and from Andrews to Antelope, and around the world at kboo.fm. Remember to support your local food bank as you tune in to your community radio station, KBOO Portland, to enjoy the 29th annual Waterfront Blues Festival.
Marching. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 43 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
This KBOO program also has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from The Art of Living, presenting Get Happy Portland, a two-day immersive experience of breathing techniques and meditation by global humanitarian Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. Get Happy Portland takes place July 5th and 6th at the Oregon Convention Center. Tickets and information are available at gethappyportland.org.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of grain, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses. Bread and Roses is a collective of radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs programming every Friday at 6 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO 90.7 FM. Women had this forum on KBOO since 1978. That's 38 years, folks. The Bread and Roses Collective always welcomes new collective members, no experience necessary. So if you'd like to host, produce, or engineer with us, contact KBOO's volunteer manager at volunteer@kboo.org. You can also find Bread and Roses on the web, kboo.fm/breadandroses. There you can listen to past shows, share comments, or show ideas. You can also like us on Facebook at KBOO Bread and Roses and tweet us at Bread Roses Radio. I'm your host tonight, Cheryl, and we have a conversation that I recorded earlier to play for you. In 2003, I just finished studying in this very critical feminist theater program at the University of Texas at Austin. It took feminism, queer studies, anthropology, storytelling, improvisation, all sorts of stuff. And my thesis project was this mess of an attempt to do a feminist storytelling and performance project. And it was a mess because I didn't study feminist theater before I started the project. So I wanted to read about feminist theater to try to figure out all the things that I had done wrong during my project. And when I was doing my research, I came across the 1970s feminist theater collectives, including one with the awesomely affirmative name, It's All Right to Be Woman Theater. A couple years later, I was at a memorial service in Ithaca, New York, and this woman was sitting next to me. She politely turned and asked me who I was and what I did, and then she told me what she did. And it turns out we have the same degree, but decades apart. And when I told her what my disastrous thesis project had been, she told me that she'd been one of the founding collective members of It's All Right to Be Woman Theater. So that was pretty awesome because I had just written about her and didn't even realize who I was sitting next to. And I can hardly contain myself that now I get to interview her. My guest today is the wonderful Sue Perlgut. Sue was teaching and working in theater when she went back and got a master's degree from NYU in educational theater, working more than 40 years in theater as a director, performer, playwright, storyteller, puppet maker, teacher, arts administrator, and producer. In the 1970s and 80s, she owned and managed Giuna Books, a feminist bookstore in New York City, and Lucia, a women's clothing store in Ithaca, New York. She is one of the founding members of It's All Right to Be Woman Theater, and she currently directs the Senior Citizen Theater Troupe of Lifelong in Ithaca, New York, and also works in filmmaking with her company, Close to Home Productions. Sue has served as president of the boards of the Kitchen Theater and the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, and helped form her neighborhood association, South of the Creek Neighbors. She is the past chair of the Tompkins County Strategic Tourism Planning Board and is chair of the board for Cinemopolis, Ithaca's local member-supported independent cinema. For the next few days, you have the opportunity to participate in a new project Sue is doing by taking the Women's Wisdom Survey online that she created. We'll tell you all about that in the interview. Sue Perlgut, welcome to Bread and Roses. Thank you so much for being here with me today.
Thank you, Cheryl, so much for inviting me.
I'd love to start by talking about the feminist theater collective movement that you were a part of in the 70s.
Before I got to feminist theater, I got to street theater. I was in street theater first. You know, I grew up very middle class, nice Jewish girl in New Jersey. But I didn't go the route of all of my friends. I moved to New York City instead when I was 23, I think it was, 24. And I kind of like didn't know what the heck I was doing, but I fell into this group. I don't even remember how I got into the street theater group, but we were called Burning City Theater. So you can imagine. Burning City Theater. And we did street theater 1960, it was probably late 68, I got involved, 68, 69. We did tours of upstate New York, which is hysterical because now I live here. We actually did places that I live near, you know. In February, what were we thinking? We didn't know. We were like from New York City, you know. Oh, you drive to upstate New York in February. Oh, it's going to be snow. Anyway, Burning City Theater, we did very political theater about People's Park in Berkeley, anti-war things. It was a collective of men and women. And in the summer of 1970, we all moved to a camp in New Hampshire, a camp that wasn't being used. And we lived collectively for the summer. It was extremely wild. And I there was so much stuff going on that I just was oblivious to. But anyway, there we were trying to do theater, and we were very dysfunctional. We couldn't function. So finally, somebody said, the women were more functional than the men, so let's do some theater just women, okay? So we pulled aside, and we started doing some workshops, just the women. And we were not getting too far, and then somebody said, well, tell a story from your life. So one woman told the story for her life, and then somebody else told the story for her life, and we went on, and we developed this amazing, gorgeous, I have the chills now, piece about our lives, different ages of our lives. That's how it went. And it was phenomenal. My piece was about when I was in eighth grade, watching American Bandstand, eighth and ninth grade, not having a lot of friends. So I'd go upstairs and I would dance with my closet door and live the whole life of American Bandstand with the kids and everything. And every once in a while, my mother would yell, "Who are you talking to?" Anyway, it's a great story. And in fact, it is written down, which is unusual. And it's in a book called Guerrilla Street Theater by a man named Henry Lesnick, who put together this whole book of street theater of a lot of people. And the book is out of print. I happen to own a copy. I'm so thrilled that I have a copy. So we did this play. And one of the reasons we were doing a play is that we got invited to something called the Festival of Underground Theater in Toronto. I can't even find anything about it online. It's amazing. It's disappeared. We were there with Bread and Puppet and all these fantastic street theaters from all over the country and the world. We were given $1,000 to have a piece at this Festival of Underground Theater. Well, the piece was this woman's piece. So we let them know we're doing a piece about women. Well, they were flipping out. Oh, my God, they're going to, like, burn their bras. This is early women's movement, you know? So we arrive, and they're really nervous. And the scene there was so wild. I can't even tell you. There was so much drug stuff and weird stuff going on. Anyway, but we performed this piece. And it was spectacular. People loved it so much that they asked us to perform it again because it was about us. It wasn't man bashing. It was about who we were as women. Well, that was life changing for me. I thought, why am I doing anything else but this? You know, I asked the women in the troupe if they would consider just, you know, doing women, and none of them wanted to do that. So there were a lot of other things that went on, but I eventually went back to New York City. We performed it. We also went to New York, performed it in New York City. We performed it a few places, and it was so well received. I knew this was what I had to do. So some of the women that saw it in New York, I got together with them, and we started doing workshops at a place called Alternate U, which was this Marxist university on West 14th Street in a loft. Yes, it was. So they gave us the space, and we started doing workshops for women. And somehow the work, just people, friends invited friends. And we ended up one day, we were doing workshop after workshop. And finally, one day I looked around and said, "This is it. Whoever is here today is in the troupe." And some people left, some people stayed. There were 10 of us. And I had a really good friend who had been in Bread and Puppet and another street theater troupe I'm blocking at the moment. I invited her. So there were 11 of us. We formed It's All Right to Be Woman Theater. We took the name. Those days, shamelessly, copyright meant nothing. There was a poem that a woman who wrote, and she wrote It's All Right to Be Woman, and we just took the name. In fact, we took her poem and used it too. Like, we gave her credit. We would say this poem, this is by her. So that's how It's Right to Be Woman Theater got formed in the fall of 1970. It came out of my being in street theater, seeing the power of women telling stories from their lives. And the reason we would tell stories from our lives, television and movies at that time and still forward, did not portray women as real women. They were not the roles of who we really were. Plus, this was the women's movement, and we were discovering that we had all kinds of thoughts and feelings that had never been acknowledged. And we wanted a certain kind of equality. Seems like a lame word, but we wanted to be who we were as powerfully as we could. So that's how this all came about.
You know, I joined Bread and Roses deliberately. Oh, feminist radio collective, I'm in there. But yours wasn't so deliberate. You just, let's just have the women do this. And then you show up at this festival. Oh, and they weren't expecting, you know, just women-oriented stuff. But it all started to come together when you didn't sort of ham-fistedly, you know, this, I have to do feminist theater. But then it grew from there, and then you did.
And then it was clear to me that's what I had to do, and I jumped into the women's movement, both feet forward, and I like to say I grew up in New York. I mean, it really, women's movement, I finally could be who I am. I'm a feminist. Oh my God, you know? And there I was, and there were all these other like-minded women, and there we were doing the same thing. The troupe was extremely successful. We would have performances in New York. We toured. We also went to upstate New York, but we didn't go in the winter. We toured to colleges mostly because that's who would pay us, and women's centers all around. So we had these performances in New York City, and we decided to do, we said, okay, Friday night would be men and women. Saturday night was women only, because Saturday night was date night. We wanted to change what that looked like, because several of the women in the troupe are lesbians. And so we were changing what that would look like. Well, unbelievably, I mean, I didn't know that 500 people coming to performance wasn't what everybody got. So we would have these performances in New York City, and we'd have them in gyms or church, you know, halls, and people would come and sit on the floor, and there'd be 300 to 500 people in the audience. And I thought that that was normal when I left and started doing other things. Like when 20 people showed up, I thought, oh, what's wrong? No, that's the norm. So we would have these amazing audiences. We had women who were having aha moments all over the place. There were women who came and went home and left their husbands. it's not like we were, our theater was about us, and some of it was about being lesbian and some of it was not. There's one very famous scene. Well, actually, I started to make a documentary about It's All Right to Be Woman Theater, and the funding wasn't there. So there is a 15-minute promo which talks a lot about the theater, which you can find at www.itsallrighttobewomantheater.com. I had a reunion, and we did a lot of talking about things that people remembered. And there's things I didn't remember that other people did, and things I remembered that other people didn't. So we were together for 6 years. Halfway through, we had a split, and it wasn't a gay-straight split. Some people remember it as those who supported the lesbians. I remembered it as a creative split. Those of us who wanted to do theater in a certain way and those who wanted to do it in a different way. Then we were a collective, and some of us decided who could stay and who could go. This is not a nice moment, not a good moment in the life of that theater troupe at all. But that's what happened. We finally disbanded at the end of 1976 with 5 members left. While I was doing it, and I'm not a person who always lives in the moment, I was living in the moment saying to myself, this is special. This is extremely special. Like, enjoy it. And I did.
I noticed that you never gave out your names. You, in all the write-ups, it was an actress said such and such, another actress. So you're doing this public storytelling. You're presenting your own stories, but also sometimes getting audience members to tell a story, and then you would act them out. Why was it that you remained anonymous through that?
Well, we at the performances, we'd say, this is Sue's story, this is Ellen's story, this is Lucy's story. We did. This was the late 60s, early 70s, and we made a conscious decision to deal with the media in a different way. We didn't want the hierarchy of so-so is a better actress than so-so. We didn't want that. You know, I mean, it was true. There were people who were better than others in the troupe, but so what? That's not the point of the troupe. So we didn't want that. And therefore they didn't get our names. There's one story where the reason we have actually some of the video, because, you know, we didn't even, none of this is written down. There are no plays written down, but we did manage to get 2 videos. One, Channel 13 in New York City came to us and said, we want to videotape a performance. This is 1972. This is amazing. So we said, no. It's like, no. So they came back. They were aggressive. We want to, no. Okay. All right. So then we decided, okay, they had to pay us. It had to be an all-woman audience, and it had to be an all-woman crew. They said yes to all 3. $250. Pathetic. But that's what he got paid. all women audience and an all-woman TV crew. The women and the crew were thanking us because they were having enormous trouble getting jobs in the industry. So there we were providing all these women with, you know, jobs. And we got taped. And they left some things out, and that was a big to-do. They left out the lesbian stuff. I don't remember this, but they told one of the women that their audience wasn't ready for it. This is 1972. Stonewall had already happened. Okay. So anyway, so luckily we had that tape of that performance. And then our very last performance, which is, that tape is all 11 of us. Our very last performance is 5 of us. It's a very different kind of performance. And someone luckily said, gee, we should have this videotaped. And we hired a woman's crew and they videotaped it. So that's how we have 2 plays.
That wouldn't happen nowadays because everyone would just pull their phones out and record it.
Yeah, or write it down.
Yeah.
I mean, I do senior theater troupe now. I direct a senior theater troupe. First of all, none of us are going to admit to having a memory. So, and it's all written down and I've got it all on my computer and I could bring it back up. It's a script. We read the script. We literally hold it in front of us and read the script.
So a lot of the stuff you did with It's All Right to Be Woman Theater was improvised or partially improvised, right?
Well, yeah. What we did is we did workshops. We'd come up with an idea or a theme or a story. You know, someone say, oh, I have this story. And we would improvise. But then we said it. It became a set piece. There was no improvising almost shouldn't have been improvising during the performance. We did do this thing that we stole from another theater group called Dream Plays. And what that was is someone would get up and tell their dream and we would act it out on the spot. We got to be really, 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 really good improvisational actors. So then we even got to a place where we would even do a theme. Like we were at a school and we said, okay, well, tell stories about your teachers. And students would get up and we would improv it. So one time we're at a school near where I grew up at a college, and in the audience are a couple of young people who I had taught in 5th grade. So one of them gets up and she says, I'm going to tell a story about my 5th grade teacher. Oh, and I looked at the troupe and I went, that's me. Oh. I'm like, that's me. And she got up and she told a hysterical story about me teaching in 5th grade. I didn't get up. I like decided I didn't need to participate in this. And so anyway, that was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's so cute. I know that it's easy for a woman to look at herself and describe herself through the lens of men and their relationship to men. Did you find that women did that, or that they were able to put themselves at the center of their own stories?
It was always a theme, and it was usually about the woman's experience. And we didn't do it enough that something emerged that I even looked at that. There were stories about relationships to men. However, we were the center of the story. You know, it was about us. We were always the center of the story. And, you know, we wore jeans, and for a long time we went braless. Oh, yeah. There's like film of me and, you know, like little skinny t-shirts and, you know, hairy underarms and hairy legs. And yeah, so we just decided, you know, we were who we were. Yeah. So I think we didn't tell stories through the lens of men. It was always through the lens of us. And, you know, I don't remember women standing up, and if they had, we probably would have changed the scenario anyway, the way we acted it out. So we probably would have.
And in addition to performances, you did consciousness raising workshops, self-defense workshops for women.
The consciousness raising workshops would be theater workshops. So basically, we would do theater workshops using theater exercises that help women talk about themselves and those kinds of things. So that's what I would say. And the self-defense, we had a woman in the troupe, Roberta, who ran a karate school for women. So Roberta would lead those.
You know, I know you had women from all different walks of life, gay women, straight women working together. Did you have women of color or women with disabilities involved?
So at that time, early women's movement, even though several of us had come out of the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, And when I was in college, I was very involved in a racially mixed groups. We did not. Our diversity at that time was class. We had working class, middle class, and upper class, although we never talked about that. That came out when we were at the reunion, that it was there was class stuff. And we never said that. It's interesting. We talked about our lives all the time, and yet that wasn't an analysis we made. Or not that I remember. This is through my lens, you realize. This is me talking about what I saw in the troupe. So that inclusiveness of women of color and now with seniors with disability came later in my life. I was very involved with a group of African-American women. We were black and white women together, and we talked a lot and worked through things. But at that time, no, there was just not that. At the time we started, there wasn't a very visible, active women of color women's movement, which there was, but not very active. It became much more active later. And if we had done theater later, maybe these women would have joined. On the other hand, here we were doing theater. We couldn't have full-time jobs because of the theater. So we were lucky. We were able to live and have part-time work. Whether women of color could support themselves that way, maybe not, just don't know. It just wasn't happening, and it's who we were. You know, I lived in New York City, and I paid $150 for my fifth-floor walk-up in the Village. So I could afford not to have a full-time job.
Right, right. You can't even get a shelf in someone's closet for $150 now.
That's right. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. And I know people in New York live in each other's closets.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Literally, yeah.
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 Through the windless wells of wonder, by the throbbing light machine, in the tea trance or under orders from the king and queen, songs to aging children come,
songs to aging children come,
aging children. So quickly, don't they hear the melodies in the chiming and the clicking and the laughing harmonies? Songs to aging children come.
That was Joni Mitchell's Songs to Aging Children Come, and I'm talking to Sue Perlgut today, one of the founders of It's All Right to Be Woman Theater. Sue is currently working in both theater and documentary filmmaking. You mentioned being parts of civil rights, and you've been involved in social justice your whole life, and we've talked about feminism. Do you feel like being Jewish also played a role in your civic engagement?
For me, absolutely. And I would say that's not true for all Jewish people, but for me, knowing the history, knowing about the Holocaust, experiencing anti-Semitism where I grew up, although I had mostly Jewish friends, it was clear certain things you could do or not do. For me, being Jewish was definitely about being an activist. That's what brought me to the civil rights movement. I thought this is a no-brainer. Anti-Semitism, racism. There's a no-brainer here for me. This is how this all works together. And so anti-Semitism, racism, feminism, same thing. And so as a feminist, when I got more involved in working with women of color, when I would run up against feminists who didn't get it, who didn't understand about women of color and their role, I didn't get it, because to me, it's all the same thing. Any bigotry, any racism, any sexism, it's all the same thing. It comes from the same place, and I want to work against it in the same way.
I would love to hear your perspective on the role of art and performance in social change movements, because it's not just about marching or policy and legislation.
For me, all my art, as it turns out, all my creative work has always been in the realm of being meaningful and social change and social justice. I wouldn't have said those words, but I just knew it had to. My art for me had to reflect some kind of better world or change that I wanted. And so my theater, It's All Right to Be Women Theater, all the women's theater I did, the courses I taught at Richmond College and Staten Island were all radical in some way. Working with a senior citizen theater troupe, although I would never use the word feminist, and just recently we have a man in it for the first time. But they're telling stories from their lives, and I'm the final editor of the piece, and so I'm very careful about it. Is their voices, so there are some things I would never say, but I'm very careful about making sure that it's all very positive and uplifting. And these are people telling stories from their past, which young people and other people are thrilled to hear. So in many ways, it's showing, look, we had a past. We are still viable older people who are speaking. My movies, all the films I make are all wanting also to help with social change. My most recent movie, well, I made a movie about the hospice movement. My most recent movie about Connie Cook. Now it's interesting. Here's a movie about a woman who worked totally within the system, totally. And she did powerful things. She decriminalized abortion in New York State in 1970 as a Republican within the system. Without her, I'd still be on the streets. Well, I may get back on the streets, but back in the 70s, one day I'm on the street protesting for abortion rights, and the next day I'm not. And it's because Connie Cook got that legislation through. Yes, through the support of other people, but it's interesting for me, who's always worked so outside the system, to make a film about a woman who worked totally within the system. So I think actually both places have a place, but not for me. I really like working. I like doing my own thing and doing what comes from my heart, really. And from my heart is all about wanting a better life for everybody. And so I think theater and film and music and dance are so powerful that it does change people's lives when they see when they see art. Even if it's not, doesn't have a social justice theme, young people see something, think, that's what I want to do. All of a sudden, they have something else in their lives that they feel called to do. And to me, that's extremely powerful. And the fact that we don't have a support system in this country to support the arts in the way they are in other countries is, I will use the Yiddish word, a shanda. It's a shame. It is. We should be ashamed.
Like you said, it provides a place for people who are working outside the system. And I think that's one reason that it's devalued at a higher level.
Well, there's also people working, there's also famous opera troupes and dance troupes and, theater on Broadway, which is ridiculously expensive. They're supported, but it may be. And it may be also that those of us working outside the system have a message that the system doesn't necessarily want to hear. So they're not going to support it. But other people will.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like you were saying, the art and performance is also documenting other people doing social change in different ways. And as you mentioned before, when somebody might see themselves reflected on stage and they realize, wait a minute, there is a disconnect between what I see here and what's true in my heart, I need to change my life.
That's right.
I mean,
that's right.
That's so cool.
It's the same thing of young black boys and hopefully girls looking at Obama and saying, oh my gosh, there's a possibility here. It's the same thing with art. They look on the stage, they see these things, they say, oh, there's this possibility here. There were several women's theater troupes formed after us, after It's Right to Be Woman Theater. And so we had this legacy that went on. The thing too is I just heard a story this weekend that I had never heard, that a woman I know dragged her 16-year-old daughter to come see this documentary about Connie Cook and the work that Connie had done. My daughter's like, oh, I want to go, you know, she goes, and they leave, and she goes, oh, it was a good movie. And then she turns to her mother and she says, you know, I really want to do something that changes people's lives. I really want to get involved. I really want to. And I had never heard that story. And I was like, yes, that's what I want. I want 16-year-old girls to feel like they have the power to do something to change people's lives. And their own lives.
Yeah, yes. Not just put on makeup and find a perkier bra.
That's
yeah.
It's wonderful. Marvelous, you should care for me. It's awfully nice, it's paradise, it's what I love to see. You made my life so glamorous. You can't blame me for feeling amorous. Oh, it's wonderful, marvelous, that you should care for me.
That was Diana Krall doing the Gershwin tune, Swonderful. Now back to more A Conversation with Sue Perlgut. So you have a new project happening right now that I just participated in. I would love to talk about, and Lord, I don't remember anything I wrote to you. I hope it was in any way useful, but I want to talk now about the Women's Wisdom Play and the Women's Wisdom Survey. So the survey, you created the survey for this reading play multimedia event that you're going to do in October 2016 at Cinemopolis and Lifelong. And you got a grant from the Community Arts Partnership of Tompkins County, yay grant, and the New York State Council on the Arts to do the project, yay council. Do you already have an idea in mind of what this multimedia performance event is going to look like?
I don't. I mean, I have
Excellent.
A vision. I have a vision. I mean, I know in my head, I see it. I mean, Cinemopolis is a independent cinema in Ithaca. We're very lucky to have it. I happen to be president of the board, but that's not why I'm doing it there. I mean, anybody could do stuff. But I do. I can see the actors and I can see the film behind them. I just don't know what the actors are going to say or what the film is going to look like. So I'm in the process of this survey, which is collecting data, essentially, which I'm going to use in the reading and somehow on screen, and I don't know how. I'm also interviewing women, some on my iPhone, which is new for me, and my film partner is here this week. I've got 10 days. He and I are working on 5 projects in 10 days to finish up. I'm working on a small pro-choice video. I'm working on the Women's Wisdom and on and on. So while he's here, I am taping women talking about some of their advice and wisdom that they give. And if you look on my Facebook page, you'll see 2 clips of this woman. She just cracked me up. So look, I put up 2 little clips of her talking about some advice. It's very, very sweet. So the survey was really to collect data and to use the data in a piece, but I'm also going to work with 5 women who are actors. And so I'll do some improvisation with them and not just use words from the survey, but also see what comes up with them. I have no idea. I'm just doing this. I thought I want to put film and theater together because they're my loves. I wrote this grant. They give out 2 of these grants in the county. I thought, well, fine. I can write the grant, but great. I wrote the grant. I got the grant. I was like, okay, now I got to do this. So I'm working very, you know, the survey will be done June 30th. I will download all the information. I'm working with a young woman at Cornell who is getting her PhD in theater. So she's going to work with me and help me with it. You know, it's for me, it's improvisation. because improvisation is kind of how I've lived my life and how I do my theater. So I'm improvising this piece. I know it will happen. I know it'll be good because I'm working with fantastic women. I'm getting great answers on the surveys. Again, I just wanted to do something about women, about their wisdom, about their advice that was done multimedia. And because it's local, I'm just going to use whatever film I feel like. This summer, it's after I finish the few projects I'm doing at the moment, it is what I'm going to focus on for the rest of the summer. So I'll be writing, I'll be putting film clips together, I'll be doing some workshops with the women I hope I'm going to work with, and we'll see what happens. I will have it taped by our local cable access TV station, so I will have it on tape.
So this survey is not just local. Anybody can get online and take the survey.
I mean, the grant is supposed to be for women in Tompkins County, but I really want it to be very broad. I want it to be a lot of different ages, and I really want to hear what women around the country, the world, because I've encouraged women to send to their friends from around the world what women have to say, really.
And this survey, it's a SurveyMonkey survey. It's at surveymonkey.com/r/womenswisdomplay. It's open until June 30th, the survey. So I have really good timing.
That's right. And so you can look on Facebook too. It's on facebook.com/womenswisdomplay. So you can learn more about it there too. And for the Connie Cook documentary, it's ConnieCookfilm.com.
Another question about who can take the survey. What about transgender or non-binary gender people or someone who may have identified with girl or woman or female but doesn't now?
There could be men taking the survey and I would never know. So whoever takes it, takes it. I'm not asking that question. So the answers will be what they are, and I'm not being specific at all for a reason.
I appreciate that because it's kind of part of the patriarchy for me to tell you who you are. Having it more open, I think, does fit with the social justice framework that you've always had and the kind of feminism that you have that is to benefit all people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm a second wave feminist. I'm an old guard feminist. I had conversations with a lot of young people about words and how people identify and the whole cisgender thing, which blew me away when I first found out about it. I was like, wow, I had to look it up online. I'm like, what is this? So it's been an education for me because I am kind of stuck in second wave feminism, and I'm being forced out of it to look at things that I haven't looked at and do it with a feminist sensibility.
Do you appreciate that or are you like, I'm comfortable?
Yeah, well, I'm comfortable and I think, I don't want to be my mother or my parents. I do want to be my mother in some ways. I don't want to be that that generation that is so stuck. But I do find myself saying, oh my God, how could these people do that? How do young people do that? I could never do that. And I think that's just happens when you age, maybe not with everybody, but I mean, there are things that I'm comfortable with and I believe in, and to see them question is scary. Yeah. I want to be open. So I'm do work at it. I have to work at it. I think that I would say that in some ways, to be able to live the life I've lived and I'm living now, that it came out of definitely privilege, that I've had some privilege. I had the sense of self to know that I could do back in New York City in the late 60s and 70s. I also owned a feminist bookstore, that I could do these things outside the system and somehow I would be okay. Also, money never played a big part in, I always just had enough to live on. And that was okay too. I wasn't amassing money. And as an artist, one does not amass money. And that was okay with me. As I got older and I understood that maybe I needed to have some money. I had to take, I've had more traditional jobs. I ended my career in life as a fundraiser. However, I did it for nonprofits. So that was great. And it's a good skill to have because if you're an artist, being a fundraiser is extremely important. Extremely important, as it turns out. Otherwise, I couldn't have made any of my films or even done some of my theater work because I operate a lot under grants. So yes, there is a sense of privilege that I could do this, even though where I came out of it, people were like, oh my God, what is she doing? But it didn't matter. Other people who want to do arts or want to do social justice, it's probably much more of a struggle. And I honor that. It doesn't seem hard to me, didn't seem hard to me. Now that I'm retired, I even have more freedom. I feel like, so what? I'm making a two-minute pro-choice abortion, and I'm talking about my illegal abortion. Okay, go ahead, put me in jail. You know, right? Like, I don't care. I could just do so much more now. I think there's something about being older that can be, and it is for me, extremely freeing. So, and that is in my art. It's coming out in my art, and it's great. It's just, I never thought I could be here. I'm having as much fun and enjoying my life as much as I did when I was doing It's All Right to Be One Theater, which I thought would never happen again. And here I am, many, many years later, having that same kind of creative input and thrill and doing the work I want to be doing.
It doesn't surprise me because the film that you made about aging.
About retirement.
And it had that spirit to it. Like, okay, I'm retired.
Yeah.
Let's enjoy life and not buy into the message that society gives you that now your productive time is over. So now you're not productive and you're not valuable. Like, you really challenge that in that movie and you're living it.
I am. And my role models are those people in their 80s and 90s. I just read this article about a woman who wrote her first novel when she was 86. I was like, yes, okay, good. And then somebody who's doing something at 92. And I'm like, oh, I need to stay, because I keep thinking, oh, am I too old? Oh, do I have to stop? So I see these role models. I think, no, I don't have to stop. In fact, as I said to somebody, what would I do when I stop? And she said, well, you'd write your memoirs. I was like, maybe, but I don't want to stop. As long as my health permits it, I will go forward. I was just on a retreat this weekend, a woman's retreat, as you know, and through one of the exercises, I got very in touch with my body, and this poem just came up about the aging body. You know, what we were doing when we were in our late 20s, you know, the troop was mid-20s to late 20s. Actually, we did have one woman who was 20 years older. She was really a mentor to me, Lynn. And it's hard to believe she was 20 years older. She was so young in spirit. And so that means she's still 20 years older, which means she's in her 90s. She's still perking. She just friended me on Facebook. I'm like, yeah. Lynn just friended me on Facebook. Go. So, yeah, things have changed as we age.
Remind people where they can find you online.
Okay, so the one place to go is closetohomeproductions.com, and that would link you to my movies. It would link you to Connie Cook. It would link you to the Senior Troupe, but it wouldn't link you to Women's Wisdom. I don't think I put that up. So Women's Wisdom, you want to look at facebook.com/womenswisdomplay. And for the survey, it's surveymonkey.com/r/womenswisdomplay through June 30th. And for the Connie Cook film, it's conniecookfilm.com.
So I can't thank you enough. And that time that you introduced yourself and we discovered that I wrote about you in my thesis, but because you were anonymous, I didn't know it was you. And so wonderful and exciting. And I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today.
I'm thrilled to have done it, really, truly.
I'm going to play you Deaf Brown Girl by Sabina England. Much like Sue, Sabina is a playwright, performance artist, and filmmaker. She's also deaf and an American Sign Language poet. You can find this piece on YouTube where you can see Sabina perform in ASL and read the closed captions. The voiceover you hear in the piece is by MicroPixie.
Stillness, nothing in the air. World quiet. Everywhere, streets bursting full of people walking running, talking. Voices echoing across, singing, joking, laughing. Their sounds whirl around, noisy, chaotic. Laughter, music, noises dancing, reverberating through the space. Their sounds become motionless, meaningless. The world stands still. Silence. My ears empty. Darkness and void, the canals. Reality. Laugh, joke, sing. I remain untouched. I can't understand. I'm desperate to communicate. Desperate to communicate. Desperate to communicate. I'm here. But I'm not here. I exist, but I don't exist. Alone in the world, I stare out at people. I can't join in, because I can't understand. Because I can't. I don't fit in anywhere. They stare. I know it, I feel them. Their eyeballs penetrating my soul. I never know if they want to stare at the hearing aids in my ears or to watch me move my hands to convey sign language. Or do they stare because my family is covered up in Indian clothes with sari and bindi? Our family eating Indian food with our hands. They stare at us as if we are fucking monkeys. They must think I'm a freak. Too different. Deaf. Different. Brown. Exotic. Foreign. Muslim. Terrorist. White, not Christian, not American. When people talk to me, they treated me like fish, talking down to me as if I'm a stupid little child. The way they treated me made me hate myself. I just want to be normal, be able to hear, talk, laugh, sing, blend in with everyone, make myself known to people. Communicate easily, no problem. I'm tired of standing out from the crowd. I'm tired of people staring at me. tired of them asking stupid questions about my culture, my deafness, my religion. I just want to be normal. Billions of humans, many different cultures, languages, tribes. But still, I'm so alone.
So different.
Yeah, I'm different. I can't change who I am. I'm deaf. This is me. I gotta accept who I am. I have many cultures, languages, traditions. Deaf, Indian, Muslim, brown, beautiful. So many ways to express my soul. I'm different. Yeah, I'm damned proud. Deaf, brown girl.
We're going to close out with Nina Simone's Don't Let Me Be Misunderstood.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. You know, sometimes, baby, I'm so carefree. Joy that's hard to hide. And then sometimes again it seems that all I have is worry. And then you're bound to see my other side. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. And I get more than my share, but that's one thing I never mean.
Sometimes I find myself alone, regretting some little foolish thing, some simple thing that I've done. I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood. Don't let me be misunderstood. I try so hard, so please don't let me be.
You are listening to Bread and Roses, and I'm your host, Cheryl Green. Tonight, it was my pleasure to bring you this episode talking to Sue Perlgut. Please check out our archived episodes at kboo.fm and comment on our Facebook. Thank you so much for listening. Bread and Roses is a collective of radio activists bringing you feminist news and public affairs programming every Friday at 6 p.m. Have a great weekend, everyone. And this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Revolution Hall, presenting two nights with the Waylon Jennies Friday, July 22nd and Saturday, July 23rd. Tickets and information for these 21 and over performances by the Waylon Jennies are available at revolutionhallpdx.com.
And this KBOO program has also been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Nappy Farms, specializing in sustainable You Pick Blueberry practices. Nappy Farms You Pick Blueberries is located at 10280 Southeast Orient Drive in Boring, Oregon. For more information, the number is 503-663-0885 or online at nappyfarms.com.
Down in the cellar in the bozo, I went looking for some sweet. Just another hard time band with Negro affectations. I was a hopeful in rooms like this when I was working cheap. It's an old romance, the boho dance. It hasn't gone to sleep. Slave. priest with a pornographic watch, looking and longing on this night. Sure, it's stricken from your uniform, but you can't get it out of your eyes. Nothing is capsule.
Cash for Kim. It's 7 o'clock. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale. Yay! This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into community radio. Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. We're accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Wednesday, August 10th. The sale will be held in mid-August. Stay tuned for details. Please, no home recorded cassettes, VHS tapes, or mold. If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email Ani at volunteer@kboo.org or phone her at 503-231-8032, extension 213.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Green Days.